Hey, everybody. Welcome or welcome back to the Park Ridge Presby podcast, the podcast of Park Ridge Presbyterian Church in Park Ridge, Illinois. I'm your host, Amanda Joria. I'm a pastor here in Park Ridge, but I am also just a mom. And as a mom, I love free things for my kid, which is why I love Buy Nothing groups. I am always on the lookout for stories that inspire me. And today's story comes because of another woman's post in a Buy Nothing group on Facebook here in Park Ridge. I love sharing stories with our podcast community that inspire me. And today that is what our conversation is about. It grew out of this story that just inspired me that I knew you all in the podcast community needed to know about too. So today's episode is about a family who opened their home to a refugee family of six and how our Park Ridge community rallied around them, all from this one post in a Facebook group. You are going to love this conversation with Dennis and Joy Farina. And if you live in Park Ridge, you are going to love our community even more than you do now. I am so proud of the compassion and generosity of my neighbors that is demonstrated in this story. By the end of this episode, you are going to want to make a difference too. I just know it. And so we've put some resources in the show notes that can help you take a next step and try to make a difference in your own way. As Joy reminds us, there are a million ways that we can get involved and make a difference, helping one of our neighbors get settled. So there is something that you can do to make a difference. And some of the resources that we share are just some of the ways that you can take a next step. Enjoy this conversation with the Farinas. I'm so excited to have the Farinas with us on the podcast today. We've got Joy and Dennis, and they're here in Park Ridge. And I saw a crazy cool story about what their family is doing and the way our community responded, and I wanted to see if they'd get on the podcast, and sure enough, here they are. So thank you, Joy and Dennis, for being with us. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and your family and your connection to Park Ridge?
Okay, yeah, we're Dennis and Joy Farina, and we live here in Park Ridge. Joy has been a resident of Park Ridge for almost all her life.
Yeah, since my family moved here, I think I was five. So most of my memories are rooted somehow in Park Ridge.
And I just moved to Park Ridge when we got married 10 years ago. I was born and raised in Chicago, not far from here. We have three kids. We're empty nesters. They're all grown. A 22-year-old lives in Colorado. 26-year-old lives in Arizona. And our 28-year-old is a police officer in a northwest suburb.
Awesome. We have a lot of police officer connections here in our congregation. My husband's in Northbrook and the department there. So very
cool. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Thank you to your husband.
What's that?
Thank you to your husband for serving.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the families around him, right? Thank you to you guys. Yeah. You know, when my husband was going through the academy, they told everybody how much it's the team around the team, right? It's the family right. around these people doing this work that really allow them to do it because it's hard. And you got to be a soft landing place sometimes. So thank you to your family too. So you guys Joy posted something on Facebook about a family that you guys were opening your home to. And you posted there's this group on Facebook called the Buy Nothing Group, and it's my favorite thing in the world. And people, they pass on things they don't need, or they put out a request, hey, I'm looking for this. Does anybody have it? It builds community and shares resources and keeps things out of the dumpsters. It's amazing. But Joy, why don't you talk about what you posted on the Buy Nothing group and the response that you got?
First of all, it was an absolutely surprising and wonderful response. So I'll tell you that the family came to us. I got a call from World Relief asking if we were available to host a family. And I think it was late Friday, maybe like a 4 o'clock on a Friday. And I'll back up just to say as well that the reason I got a call from World Relief is that four days before, so it was a Monday, I had made a call. I talked to Dennis about this, and I made a call to World Relief. And I had seen everything, was just so, kind of burdened and just grieving what I was seeing in the news about the families in Afghanistan. And having some experience hosting with World Relief previously, I hadn't done it. We hadn't done it for years. So I thought, you know what? I feel so helpless watching what I'm watching, seeing these mothers like lift a child over a barbed wire fence, you know, just because they're so desperate to try to get out. I'll call World Relief and see if they need any hosting. And at that time they said, you know, thanks so much. We'll take your name and number at this time. You know, we don't have a need, but you know, we'll call you if we do. And so I just kind of left it there. Didn't really anticipate that, that anything would really come of it. That Friday at 4 o'clock, we got a phone call and my contact there, Juan Contreras, he said, well, we don't have an Afghan family, but we do have an Angolan family. Dennis and I were like, well, close enough, you know. So, you know, you go where the need is, right? And at that point, he didn't have much of a story at all. But he said, are you available to host? You know, and I said, give me 5 minutes. Let me just go double check with my husband, make sure that it's, you know, we're still good for the time period. He said anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, you know, let me just make sure that we're still good with that. And it's a family of six. So, they're going to be at O'Hare in 2 hours, or no, maybe it's 3 hours in any event. So Dennis, you know, I talked it over with Dennis and I called Juan back and said, yeah, that will work. Now my first post then to the Buy Nothing was, you know, I was kind of in my mind, Juan was able to tell me that the family was a mother, father, four children, and that the children were eight. One was eight, twins that were 11, and then a 15-year-old. And we have a lot of empty bedrooms. I think we've always just felt like, hey, we've got 5 bedrooms. All our kids are gone. You know, let's not let all this go to waste, right? And but at the same time, I thought, well, they might really kind of all want to stay geographically together. They're coming into a brand, you know, a new country. So I just asked, hey, does anyone have any twin-size beds? So that way I could put 4 twin-size beds in one big area. So all the kids would be together right next to mom in a bedroom that we had there. And it was like half an hour and I had 2 twin beds. I was like, this is awesome. Yeah. Then the family got here and we realized the family of six was literally coming through the front door with all of their worldly possessions in 2 grocery bags. That was it. That was all they had. And so that's where I reached out to the community to say, you know, I mean, we've gotten rid of kids' clothes a long time ago. I just mentioned, hey, we've got this family that has just, you know, come through our door. And I started to learn a little bit about the story at that time. And what I did learn that first kind of in the first interaction when we had a translator with us, because the family speaks French and Portuguese, but no English, was that although they were from Angola, they didn't fly here from Angola. They flew wherever they could get a ticket initially because they were literally escaping for their lives. And they were able to get a ticket to São Paulo, Brazil. Wow. So then you say, well, wait a second, how'd you get from São Paulo, Brazil to the border where you then got on a plane in Texas? And the answer to that was they walked. They walked. Which is also why they had 2 grocery bags of their possessions, because you can't walk with 4 kids all of that way, all of that time, with much more than 2 grocery bags full of your earthly possessions. And so that was kind of my post, like, hey, the basic sizes of the kids and dad. Does anyone happen to have anything laying around that you're not, you know, that you, clothes that your kids have outgrown, shoes that, you know, they're not wearing? And that is where I just saw the most beautiful community come together to answer, a compassion, you know, with compassion, the need of this family.
Yeah, it was incredible. The amount of comments I saw on people saying what they had or wanting to know where they could do more or drop things off. It was incredible. And I think it must have been in response similar to how you all got started, where people were seeing these images of
a community falling apart in Afghanistan, right? And it felt so far away and that they couldn't do anything. And then there is this family who was also escaping and feared for their life, yes. Took this long journey, and these were people, they could respond to their need. And what a gift and what an unforeseen journey for the whole community to go on after, you know, seeing what we were all seeing and feeling so helpless.
And then talking with the father and him sharing his story a little bit more, he knew, you know, he was, you know, being persecuted down there, family and friends, and he had to leave. And he said, I knew bringing my family up here, like, it was so bad down there that we were going to come here, and I was okay with sleeping in the street. We were okay coming to the United States to sleep in the street because we knew we'd be safer here than back there. So it's just really heartbreaking to hear what they had to go through in their journey to get here. But now that they're here, they're such a blessing. Because you think on one end, you know what, we're going to take this family and, man, we're going to love them. We're going to bless them and really just show them the love of Christ. And the reality of it is it's just the opposite. You know, they brought a blessing into our house, and they're a blessing to us. And probably the biggest struggle has been the language barrier, because we speak English, they speak French and Portuguese, and one son speaks a little bit of English. So we use the translator to communicate back and forth. But their English is getting better, you know, they want to learn, and they're picking up the English. And ironically, I think my Portuguese is getting a little better also. So there's a little bit of benefit there too.
And I'll tell you, having apps like translator apps, when you're talking about short sentences and requests and questions, like, it's been a lifesaver. I mean, it's hilarious when it sometimes spits out, because you know that it's just not, you know, there's something getting lost here in translation. But that makes for some fun. But, you know, certainly if we're having longer, more nuanced conversations and planning, et cetera, we try to connect with, so the one connection they had here, yes, is a pastor who is from Angola as well, but he's been here, I think, 10 years. Young pastor in his late 20s, with a small family, you know, and a growing family himself, but he is, of course, fluent in their language as well as English, so that has been an amazing help, and he is kind of part of that support team. And, you know, like Dennis said, the blessing that comes when you recognize and you are remembering so firsthand through the eyes of these people how blessed we are to be living in a country where, by and large, there is a rule of law. And, you know, the more we heard about their quote unquote government over there, and corruption, like corruption we have here is nothing in comparison. It's just, I'm yes, there's always corruption. You know, you're going to find it anywhere where you have people in power, but, the recognizing a dream and having even just the knowledge we're in a place where we're going to be safe, where I don't have to worry that, the father and or his, all of his children are going to be murdered simply because someone, you know, who is in a leadership position decides that they want what you have. Mm. And that's part of the story that we later learned, is that having to flee here was literally very unequivocally, in the pursuit of physical safety, as a father was beaten and left for dead, his business partner was murdered, and it was get out of Dodge quickly and get out as far as you can. And so that was part of it. And again, like, just the desperation, this even knowing that you're going to sleep in the streets, that was their total expectation. You're walking for 4 months to get here. And I think that just weighed heavy on us. Circling back to what you said too, just about, you know, people, all of us seeing some of the need just on, you know, the crisis of the day that, you know, and for us, it was Afghanistan, what was going on there. Having a very real story and people in front of you and faces in front of you, you know, it's amazing. We can all drum up hypothetical philosophical arguments and have a banter back and forth, you know, on Facebook. But somehow that day when that post went up and the subsequent weeks even after that, nobody cared if you're blue or red or what your overall philosophy was on immigration policy. There were hundreds of people that didn't care about that and in compassion saw the need that was right in front of them. And I think that's really where God's called us to be. You know, God needs my hands and feet a lot more than he needs my opinion.
Wow. Amen. I think that is so beautiful. And when we can remember the real humanity that's at stake in every single one of these things that feel like news stories or issues to debate, when we can remember that there's real children of God at play. And to your point too, like, we might have opinions, but when you're looking at the face of someone in need, your opinions are irrelevant, right?
Absolutely. We have opinions. I mean, we, all of us, right? I mean, if any of us were asked about, oh, do you have an opinion on this policy or that policy with immigration, with the border, with whatever? Yeah, I'm sure we all have one. And I'm sure we all have great reasons why we think we are right in that opinion. But at the end of the day, I really feel like one thing that we don't have to question is what God's called us to do with compassion, with the needs that are right in front of us. And this one happened to be right in front of us. And it was right in front of our community. And for us, this is what we could do. You know, this is another thing that I have learned. Dennis and I have both learned this. And I think the longer that we have been, Dennis is in full-time ministry. He works with a ministry called Adult and Teen Challenge, which is an international ministry. But he has been asked and is spearheading bringing this ministry to Chicago and starting a center here. So much of our, you know, we've been involved in different ministries. All that to say, in our adult life, serving in various forms of ministry, we have learned where we are called, where we are gifted, and where we're not, right? And this is one of those places where it does fit right within where our gifting is, where we are able, et cetera. There are a lot of other things that we can't do. And there are people that maybe because of, you know, their family situation, the number of kids that they have, the number of extra bedrooms, whatever, they can't host. But oh my goodness, can I tell you how much of a blessing it was to be getting lasagnas through the front door or meals? Oh my word. Because all of a sudden we went from, you know, scrounging the two of us for dinner, you know, whenever we thought, you know, pick, to feeding anywhere from 8 to 15 people, depending on how many people were coming through the door that night, extra people, right? And I don't know what we would have done. We probably would have ended up like with a lot of grilled cheese or hot dogs or something like that. I don't know what we would have done.
It was like a Thanksgiving dinner here every day.
With the number of people. Or, you know, again, even with some people financially have different levels of inability to give, where some people are like, hey, I'm going to go and buy a whole new XYZ. I'm going to make sure that every person has a new pair of shoes. Some people were able to do that. Other people were able to do
bikes,
a bike here and there,
cell phones, laptop,
I'll tell you another, like, crazy. There were a number of people, probably five or six great, like, hey, I can translate and I speak fluent French. Can I take the family to dinner and then we can talk more? So that was such a blessing. Oh, I cannot forget Tammy. So I made a new friend, you know, through this. Her name is Tammy Kwiatkowski, I think is how you say her last name, on the post, because I think she saw the same thing you saw, which was like 200. There were so many responses. And I tried to keep up the first night. I was up until I don't know what hour trying to like keep up. And then I was so overwhelmed. And I'll tell you, my gifting is not administration. Thank God it is organization and administration of that kind of stuff was Tammy's. Because she reached out and she's like, let me come to your eye. Like, I will come over. I will start spreadsheets. I will pull all this together and thank the Lord. Oh my goodness.
Because you all didn't know each other until this.
No. And a few days later, she's
been. That's my favorite thing ever. That's amazing.
I had never met Tammy. And what was it, like 2 or 3 days later, she's sitting at the kitchen table. I'm like, here's my laptop. Here's my Facebook. She's like, I'll start chatting. And then she was able to create another, like a new post to say, okay, We now know what is going to be needed as the family settles into, and this is kind of more the traditional model of, like, I've worked in groups before, refugee kind of settling, help, or, you know, kind of these teams with churches that will help to settle a refugee family, and they will have what they call it the Good Neighbor Kit, but essentially what it is, like, think of, like, the best reveal ever for an HGTV show. So it's like a community of people will get together, and a lot of times it starts with, like, a team that's built at church, and let's say there's 12 people on the team, and one person is the administrative person. In our case, it organically was Tammy to pull everything together. You'll have one family that will be the host, and essentially then they are kind of like, you know, serving as the friendly hotel, that soft landing for a family coming here for the first time. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's 5 days. In our case, it's 4 weeks. And then you have this other team of people that during that time that that family is, you know, spending in the host family, they are going around with their contacts and dividing and conquering with a list of what does a family need? What are the basics that a family needs to be able to move in when they do move into their first apartment? And that is everything from rolls of toilet paper to, you know, spoons in the kitchen, bedding, furniture, et cetera. And so that is, and that's kind of the, when this family does move, like I said, I've seen these before. It's like the best reveal ever because, you know, again, a family, they're, expectations coming into this country are we're going to sleep in the streets until we can get our feet under us. And instead they're walking into an apartment that's fully furnished and that's full of anything that they would need. And it just is amazing. We do not, and have learned, you do not do this for, you do this because you are blessed in the giving and you are blessed in that work. You do not do it for the gratitude of that family or for, you know, any attention that you would get from doing it. But I will tell you, there is nothing more gratifying than seeing the faces of that family during that move in. And even, you know, I can't tell you what a blessing it was. You know, the father just broke down as he was telling this story to World Relief with the translator. And as he said, I can't tell you how thankful I am to be here and to not be in the streets as we expected. And just the, like I said, the tears, the emotion of just thankfulness that the church was the church, right? I mean, he's part of the church as well. He came from a church in Angola. And I was so proud of our community that our community kind of served as the church for this family.
Amen. How incredible. So it seems like the process that, and you've housed refugee families before, been on teams before, so you've been in this work, was saying yes to that work initially, whenever that first yes was, were there any stumbling blocks for you all in that? Was that ever a hard yes? Or was it like, no, we're going to be good at this?
Dennis might have a story.
I would love your story, Dennis.
So I don't know if you've ever heard, but we're a safe family.
Okay.
Also, so
have you heard of that ministry?
I think so.
So if, say family is somebody, if a parent or a guardian of some children are going in for a surgery or maybe a
treatment,
rehab or something like that, instead of putting the kids in and they don't have anywhere to place the kids, instead of putting them in DCFS, they'll put them with us.
Yeah, it kind
or
of like
put them with other safe families.
It's like different. It's like instead of the foster care system, right? It's like a family kind of walking alongside another family. Yeah,
exactly. Right, exactly. So, you know, a kind of a funny story is I was working at a ministry at Teen Challenge in Iowa, and I was actually coming home for the weekend, and Joy called me, and we were talking on the phone. She said, "You on your way home?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Okay, good. I think I should let you know that we have 7 kids coming tonight.
Safe family kids
coming tonight." So we brought them in, and it was 5 girls, 2 boys.
Siblings.
All siblings. Grandma had to go in the hospital, and we had them. And they were, it was the same thing. It was such a blessing, but they were a little unruly at some point, and you know, we had the 2 boys playing football in the yard, and they threw the ball over the fence, And instead of going around using the gate and going around, they actually kicked out pickets through the fence to get the ball. And so we, you know, but they didn't have any direction. So I said, all right, well, this is what we do now, you know, and I took them to Home Depot, and they didn't have the pickets that matched our fence, but I got two just to put in there, and they wanted to be involved in that. You know, they wanted to put the screws in, and they wanted to measure, and they wanted to do all that, which was really, really exciting and encouraging. And, you know, recently we just had the fence replaced. But for years, I never changed out those pickets just because it was a reminder of the family that we had for that period of time.
So,
and since then, we've also taken in another set of girls, sisters.
Oh, that's right. We're different. So I guess what the point with that I learned personally to take a second of pause and at least call my husband before we say.
Talk to your husband.
Because he didn't, I realized with that one that, yeah, like, you know, I mean, obviously we had gone through the process to be vetted, you know, to be like, you know, hypothetically to accept safe family kids, but accepting seven all at once without a phone call to my, yeah. So I have learned in answer to your question, like was it difficult to say yes? You know, for me, I don't really give it a second thought. Now, today I do. I give it a second thought, and I say, "Oh, wait a second! I've been here before. I've learned. I check in with my husband."
I appreciate that.
I would 100% make that same mistake, Joy. I'd be like, "Guess what? All the rooms are full. We have twins in every room. It's gonna be fine.
It'll be fine. Like
we're having pizza for dinner. It's gonna be fine."
Right. And I think it was like only going to be 2 weeks or something. I'm like, babe, we can do anything for 2 weeks, you know.
But you know, after the initial shock, no, it wasn't hard to say yes. It wasn't hard to open our home and bring the kids in and bring them some joy and for them to be a blessing to us and bring us some joy. You know, it was really. It was great having them here, and that's why, you know, even though she asked me about bringing in our family now, she knew I'd say yes anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so
I love that. I love that, like, open-handedness with your own home and your own family time. I feel like we're kind of taught right now that our home needs to be, like, this safe place for us and, like, this place of refuge for us and, like, you know, a place of self-care and like all this stuff. There's like all these images and messages that create a very guarded home. Like, you can't come here. Don't answer your door. Don't answer your phone. And this is such an opposite story. You've opened the doors and gates of your home to be a place of blessing. And I just love that. It stands in such contrast to me, to other, other ways.
Yeah. Well, that's the difference between a house and a home, right? I mean, you can have a house, but this is a home and we want people to be welcome here. We want people to come here. We want people to feel safe here. So that's why, you know, we followed what the Lord has asked us to do. And like I said, even though she does ask me and I do appreciate that, she knows I'd say yes anyway.
Yeah.
And obviously we're in a different place being empty nesters than some people or than we would have been, you know, years ago, or that some people are today, you know. But like I said, I mean, people will do, you know, can serve in the ways that they can. There was a woman who, I think she's pregnant with her sixth child, one of the women who said, I am fluent in French and I would love to have the family over and we'll even just be out in the backyard and having a barbecue. And, you know, so she said, I wish I could do it. I'm like, are you kidding, Mary? Like, that is amazing. Excuse me. And she was able to even hear more of the family's story because she could have those full conversations. I couldn't do that, you know? And by the way, she did one of the stories she told me, she said, you know, I really focused on hearing more about the journey as they were coming here. And I think during the walk, the family started to, you know, meet other people who might have been on similar journeys or for part of it or whatever. And I'll tell you, if you put on Google, if you say, what is the distance or what is the path between San Paulo, Brazil and Texas? It will tell you, you cannot get there from, there's no route aside from an airplane. And part of the reason there is because there are some really treacherous crossings that are required, that are not pathways that you would ever want to take a child. Mm. And Mary, who was translating, heard this. She said there was a portion that the family had to cross over. The way she described it, she said it was like, imagine two really high cliffs and an enormous ravine and a river below. And then she said the way Dad described it, imagine not like a rope bridge in between, but almost like monkey bars that are going between the two cliffs. And one of the most difficult things, as Dad described to her, was he had to then do that three or four times because he had to do it with a kid on his back. And he also described times when they had to cross really very rough rivers, you know, and he said, just, you know, mom and the children are screaming as they're getting by. Other people who they met along the way who then traveled some of the journey and then didn't make it. There was one place that they were crossing a river and they did have to get on. They were able to get on, I think it was a very large river because it was like an hour and a half boat ride apparently. And the boat behind them capsized and over 70 people died. So, you know, thinking of this walk, this wasn't a walk, you know, on sidewalks across the country of, you know, America. This was walking through Panama, Costa Rica, the Amazon, going through, if you look at the map, going from San Paulo, even up to Central America, you're going through rainforest. And they were wearing flip-flops. And they were going in areas of elevation and mountainous. So that whole portion of the story, and even being able to talk to them about that, again, without people who couldn't host but could translate and could cook a meal, you know, we wouldn't have, you know, heard that or known that as well. And I'll tell you, in the faces of the kids and getting to know these kids, you would never, it's incredible to imagine what this 8-year-old has seen in her, you know, short time on this earth so far.
Well, last night, excuse me, there was a family that wanted to take the kids out to dinner. And the three younger ones, and I brought them to the restaurant, and we got out, and they pointed to the restaurant like, are we going to go there? And I said, yeah. And they freaked out. They didn't want to go in.
Because, it was Moretti's.
Because the restaurant had, you know, outdoor seating, but there were bars, you know, like it just has a fence. At that restaurant, and they just saw that and freaked out and didn't want to have anything to do with it. They didn't want to go anywhere near there. So I even had their pastor on the phone to tell them that it's okay. It's just a restaurant, but the trauma that they must have experienced with something like that was just so overwhelming. And to see their face, and they wouldn't leave my side. They would grab, holding on to me and sitting by my car. They didn't want to have anything to do with that. So I'm like, no, I'm sorry. The guy was, he was understanding. The guy's name was Chris, and he was a good guy, and he was there with his family, and I appreciate that. But the kids were just like, we can't do it.
Yeah.
So just I can't imagine what they've gone through already. Like what Joy said, she's 8 and 11, two 11-year-olds and a 15-year-old. It's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. It is. And they've already gone through this long journey and then have this whole new journey ahead of them now that they're here. So right. They're moving out of your house soon. The Mamangos are moving to an apartment soon, right?
Yes. And this has been another huge blessing just from the connection of Park Ridge. Normally, and you know, I've seen this happen before. So World Relief is the agency that kind of is the guaranteeing agency, so to speak, and has like some of the resources, the funding, the connection to all of the paperwork stuff that needs to happen. And they have relationships with landlords that are taking refuge. So, but most of the time, like where they have their relationships is in Rogers Park. And through even the first week, I mean, we asked pastor, hey, do the kids want to, you know, do mom and dad want to enroll the kids in school? And, you know, of course, dad was like, absolutely, you know, right away, you know, kind of thing. So we then the next, like the month, though, they got here on a Friday, that Monday, Dennis and I were, we had to divide and conquer because the three younger kids were going to be in the elementary. And then we found out also the middle school. So Roosevelt and Lincoln. But the oldest one was going to have to go to Maine East, and the process to enrolling all of them was somewhat different. Right. So, the elementary school kids were in school by that Wednesday. And the oldest student, is now at Maine East. So, excuse me. So, it wasn't going to be ideal, you know, not that we could ever guarantee or World Relief could ever guarantee that they could settle in Park Ridge. But after even being here for 2 or 3 weeks, they did say, hey, if there's any chance we can be outside of the city, you know, if there's anything else, you know, we're open to that. And there was a family, there's a family in Park Ridge that were 16 years ago, they bought this place that is right behind the Dempster Home Depot. They were immigrants themselves. She and her husband, so it's Anna and Greg, have been so amazingly helpful.
Yeah.
They had the family over. She speaks fluent French. So that was another great connection, another great dinner for this family. And Anna and Greg have said, we have just moved to Park Ridge and bought our starter home. We would like to be able to rent this, you know, rent out our apartment condo to this family. And so having that is so, just incredible because, again, it's not, I mean, this is certainly above and beyond anything Dennis and I and our resources could have ever provided. But again, another family in the community that is very acutely knowledgeable about, you know, just how difficult it can be to come to this country and to resettle. And they have graciously provided that great first apartment and are working with World Relief. So that will happen. Likely we'll be able to move them somewhere right in the middle of September. So they will have been with us for about a month by that point.
That's incredible. And it's going to still be a transition for them once they're in that new place. And it sounds like this support team around the family and the work of World Relief isn't going to just leave them once they're moved into that apartment.
Oh, no.
Right?
No. Like, no.
You guys are in it for the long haul.
This is where, so kind of some of the needs going forward, really the way, I mean, this was an acute and, there were a lot of systems in place that generally are in place that just weren't when we first got together. And like I said, I mean, just the amazing community essentially organically provided what this family needed in the short term. In the longer term, generally what happens is there is someone, you know, a team, it doesn't have to be an enormous team, but a team of people that has a more long-term kind of relationship ministry than with this family. And maybe it's a year after that. So that looks like, as a for instance, maybe someone one time a month can give a Saturday morning to the family. And maybe one Saturday it is teaching them how to use the local bus. Maybe it is helping them to get enrolled in the ESL classes, the parents. The kids will get it at school, but the parents. Maybe it is, taking mom shopping to a grocery store and helping her to understand, you know, the best ways, you know, how to shop and, you know, how to make sense of, you know, what items are when you can't read or when, you know, English. So it's that kind of help. It might also be someone who is, again, I think some of it is gifts of administration, people who can help the kids if they need to transition from Park Ridge schools next year into the school. It would still be Maine East, but the elementary schools would likely be different. So that kind of thing. Taking the oldest son out, and like my father did when I was 16 or 17, getting a job is a job, you know, up and down golf, or go into this restaurant, ask them what they need, you know, taking him and teaching him how to get a job, that kind of thing. So that's not an exhaustive list, of course, but that is, that's the kind of, you know, team that then carries this family forward in the long term, so that again, that transition is not as dangerous. Perhaps, you know, there's a lot of things. If you don't know, even if you don't know our money system, if you don't know what to avoid, you know, all of a sudden you someone tells you you can buy a car for $150 and you sign some papers that you can't read and you're in trouble. You know, you need people, you know, from here to help you navigate all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen there's a Google Doc that Tammy put together of all the ways that we can continue to support this family. And so I'll share that resource in the show notes of this episode and wherever else we share this. Is there any other resource that you would point the community to if they wanted to help this particular family or just get involved just like you and Dennis did?
Okay, so two answers there. So to get involved just like Dennis and I did, we got involved with World Relief. And so I'll make sure to send you the links and the phone numbers for the contacts at World Relief. There's a volunteer form that you can fill out, and there's multiple ways. It's not just hosting. There's multiple ways, asked to be on a team. Perhaps, you know, your church would say, hey, there's eight of us that want to be on a team. One can host. The rest of us are going to, I mean, I'll tell you, hosting is a lot, but there's so much more, like, and the host cannot do it all. Mm-hmm. And so that can be something for the future. In terms of, you know, getting involved or staying involved with this particular family, I would also say we will be looking to, and it might be Tammy, it might be someone else who ends up being the more long-term organizer and kind of the team lead. But yes, you could get in touch with us. And I can provide like either links or emails to get in touch with us so that we can make sure to link you to that team. So that, you know, again, if people, there's such a long list of different giftings that can help someone, again, who's an administrative person. We need somebody who's great at like pulling together and being the organizer of that team and the communicator, et cetera. Someone who certainly anybody who is fluent in either French or Portuguese, or is just amazing at using the Google Translator better than we are. You know, perhaps, you know, that would be certainly anyone who can communicate with the family is a huge leg up. And then there's so many other kinds of things, you know, again, cooking, like there's so many, tangible ways that people can get involved.
Have you heard of the organization Lasagna Love ever before? Have you heard of that?
I didn't before. Someone sent me a link for that. I never had. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. It grew out of, you know, that shutdown immediate pandemic time of just neighbors taking care of each other with food. And, you know, like dropping off a lasagna to some mom who's now like homeschooling all their kids and stuff. And somebody told us about it because we're the host site right now for Sunday night suppers. And so Lasagna Love donated like 50 pan lasagnas for our guests. Uh-oh. And we were just floored by them. But that made me think of it like somebody who can drop off a lasagna to this family sometime would be incredible.
Right.
So, but what I love too is that you made me realize that anybody could find a way to help. There's so many different kinds of things that a family might need and different gifts that we wouldn't necessarily think of. You don't have to have extra bedrooms. You don't have to have tons of extra disposable income. Like, it's really encouraging to hear that there's a lot of different ways somebody could respond to a local need.
Yeah, it could be, hey, if you've got a car, being able to be someone who can be tapped to provide a ride so that mom can get to the clinic on this date because she is supposed to get her first, you know, well-being kind of the head-to-toe checkup. I mean, something as simple as that, they will likely not have an automobile. If I had to guess, probably for a year. And so just things like that, you know, hey, you got a car you can do one day. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Are there any like last thoughts that you have or last encouragements you want to share when it comes to this story?
You know, there's a lot to it. And like we've been talking about, like what Joy has been saying is like, thank God for the community that we have that has stepped up, because we didn't, you know, you feel called to do this and you bring the people, you know, you bring the family in, you don't realize really everything that's involved. You're like, oh yeah, we have room, so we'll bring them in. But there's so much more to it than that. that we were just overwhelmed and probably not fully prepared, but that's okay because the Lord, you know, surrounded us with the community that just said, hey, man, you know, we want to love on them. We want to bless them and we want to encourage them, but we're also there for you and we're going to help you guys. And it's just been overwhelming how many people have come to just love on this family. It's really cool to, I mean, you know, it's like we've gone in a restaurant or in a store or something and people are like, hey, I know who you are. I heard the story on Facebook or whatever. And it's very satisfying and very, very filling to just be a part of, you know, God letting us to be a part of this.
Yeah. I would say, you know, one thing that I'm continually reminded in, you know, doing something like this and having been, I can't tell you what a blessing it was for me and how proud I was of our community to see so many people who recognized the truth that you are blessed in the giving, not even necessarily in what that outcome of that giving is. And people who dropped something and never even got to see the face of the family and how excited they were at, you know, the Barbie doll that the girls got to play with, or people who didn't get to experience, you know, I mean, we got to see how excited the kids were to get bikes and to learn how to ride bikes because they didn't know how to ride bikes.
Yeah, the two girls didn't know how to ride bikes, so we were out there teaching them how, and now they just tool around the neighborhood.
Oh, they can't wait to get home to get on those bikes. And so, you know, again, being reminded that although there is so much, you know, of course that there's so much, it's so gratifying to have those, to be able to see the faces and to hear the gratitude, the continual gratitude from this family. God blesses us not because, you know, our blessing in this is not that, although that is in and of itself, again, it's just a blessing to be able to have that, experience that. But our blessing is in the giving, not in the outcome of that giving. And again, like just to see that this community so obviously understands that in ways. Some people have very tangibly been able to see those faces. There is a woman in a local business that has given mom a job. I get to see mom's proud face when she comes home, yeah. How proud she is that she can do that job, shampooing people's hair and helping out at that salon. And yet, you know, again, this whole community, it seems like so many people have like just understood that as well. And have, I've seen so much more compassion in the hands and feet of this community in the last like month here. That I ever really had understood just reading the general posts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I am so encouraged by what you share about what we're seeing from our community and the response. And I'm so encouraged by you all, Joy and Dennis, to know that the Lord is leading your life in a way that is making such a big ripple of blessing in our community. It's such good news, and I love paying attention to good news and sharing good news, and I'm so encouraged to be in this work of ministry and blessing in the community with you. So I'm just so grateful for you all and excited to see what else you guys are up to, and we'll be sharing resources so that we can continue to pay attention and serve this family with you all.
Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you for your time. I know you've got a get to other important things. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, thanks again for listening today. We hope you loved this conversation with the Farinas. If you are loving the podcast, you should make sure you have subscribed to the podcast, rate it and review it so that other people can come to love the podcast too. We hope that this podcast and everything that we do at Park Ridge Presbyterian Church helps your faith make a difference for you every day. If you want to hear more from us, we'd love to connect with you. We are at Park Ridge Presby on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.